This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
We are fast approaching the hurricane season, and as always, the first report comes out around this time, and it's released by the Colorado State University, and Rob Fry, lead forecaster for the National Weather Service, joins us to kind of explain what all of this means. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Rob, this report, when I look at it compared to other numbers for averages over the years, would you say that this is an above average report about the number of storms?
Well, I mean, you have to understand that going into the season, we always are so focused on those numbers, you know. But you also have to realize, what do those numbers tell you? In reality, to answer your question, yeah, it is slightly above our climatological average in terms of numbers. But again, the question is not how many storms are going to form. It's always, where are the storms that do form going to go? And unfortunately, right, these numbers, they don't tell us that. They're just numbers. Yep. We have an idea of, you know, the numbers out there. But if, in this case, Colorado State is calling for 17, well, if all 17 storms stay out to sea, was it a bad year? No.
No.
From our perspective, no. Shipping interest may have had, and some fish out there may have gotten stirred up, but was that a bad year? No. But if 17 storms affect the, you know, East Coast or Gulf Coast, absolutely, it's a bad year. So it all depends on the actual impacts and whether or not those storms stay out to sea or if they have direct impacts on the U.S.
I guess it's safe to say that the vast majority of these storms do, in fact, stay out to sea, correct?
Yeah. And that's another thing. You know, we know that there's going to be storms every year. Most actually do stay out to sea. But there are some years where, unfortunately, quite a few will have an impact on the United States. Again, this time, early in the season like this, not even before the season even starts, we simply don't know. We actually have to wait for the time where the storm actually develops, and then what's the current weather pattern doing at that time? Then we can actually say whether or not, okay, it's going to go out to sea and only bother some fish and some shipping interests, or if it's actually going to make landfall in the U.S. or Caribbean or, you know, New Mexico.
So I was reading the report in the press release, and one of the things that caught my eye, as I said, a lot of this is driven or impacted by the El Nino Southern Oscillation. Where right, do we find ourselves relative to Enzo at the present time?
All right. So right now, you have to understand, whenever you are talking about Enzo, what that implies in terms of hurricane season. All right. And it's very unique because there's, I mean, you're thinking, why are we talking about the Pacific and the water temperatures in the Pacific? Because that actually has a correlation. And I'll give you another example of how something so far away can have an impact on, you know, on us locally. For example, during the big winter storm that we had in January, we actually got pinged in our office by the Anchorage, Alaska office, where they were actually warmer than we were. So there's a correlation. When we typically are colder, in the rare events we get snow, Alaska is actually warmer. They are actually above average. And the same thing can be applied here, in a sense, where in the Pacific, dealing with these waters, warmer waters would lead to an El Nino, cooler waters would lead to a La Nina. The correlation here for the Atlantic is, during El Nino seasons, there's a little bit more wind shear available that actually limits the amount of storms that are able to develop, generally speaking. On the cooler side, we have La Nina, which actually reduces and does the opposite. It reduces the wind shear. And then with that, we typically see a higher number of storms develop. Right now where we are, we're neither in a La Nina or El Nino. We're actually in an ENSO neutral pattern. But we are leaning a little bit cooler. So we are leaning a little bit more toward La Nina. And I think that's what Dr. Klotzbach at Colorado State was honing in on his report, and why just slightly, his numbers were slightly above average for the year.
So that kind of means that there's less availability of those high pressure systems moving across from west to east that actually kind of keep those storms offshore to a certain extent. Would that
be right? And remember, we're talking about what's going on, not necessarily here at the surface, but what's going up in the mid and upper parts of the atmosphere. That's where, you know, the winds at that level is what steer these things. Typically, you'll see an upper level high, a Bermuda high, across Bermuda and the Azores Islands in the Atlantic, steer the hurricanes or any type of tropical system just north of the equator to the west, and eventually it's going to go north. You know, all these storms want to go north. You know, that's by design, by Earth's design.
And is that because of the rotation of the Earth?
Actually, it is part of that. It is part of Coriolis, but also remember that Earth is in balance. It's trying to balance itself. That's why we have wind. Right. That's just the pressure wanted to be equal across, you know, the entire globe, which is unfortunately never going to happen for it. But it tries. The same thing happens with heat. You know, it's colder at the poles, the equator very warm. Well, Earth is trying to balance that out. So that's the reason why we get storms in the first place. So going back to what I was saying with the Bermuda high, it steers it. It wants to go north. Eventually, it will go north. But depending on exactly where, it depends on where that high sets up, and also where the trough, where troughs are beating into the side of the high pressure system. So it all is a balancing act. And again, it's all the Earth trying to just balance itself out.
Water temperatures seem to play a role as well. Where are we at the present time?
Well, I will say, if anyone was paying attention last year, we were breaking records for Atlantic sea surface temperatures. They were just really, really, really warm. We are still really, really warm this year, but we aren't breaking records. So we're a little bit lagging behind where we were last year. That doesn't mean that we're still not above average across most of the Atlantic basin. That being said, above average going into the summer, we can kind of infer that there's going to be more energy for storm development, and that's kind of where we are right now, unfortunately.
Also, you guys always talk about Saharan dust that has a positive impact in reducing the number of storms. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Basically, if you think about a hurricane, it's very, very, very moist. It thrives on that moisture, that warm, moist air. When you add the dust, it's much drier. It's much, much drier. So it's very, very difficult for a storm to get going and also maintain with that drier air in the mid and upper levels.
What influences the amount of Saharan dust? Is that something that's occurring on the other side of Africa?
No, it's just north of what we call the ITCZ, Intertropical Convergence Zone. That is basically the storm track and what kind of feeds hurricane development, especially later in the season. Along that area of thunderstorms, There's a lot of wind, a lot of dust storms that get kicked up on the north side of that in the Sahel region of Africa. That picks up the dust, it gets lofted, it gets stuck in the atmosphere, and then it continues to transfer west in the easterlies. So it's basically just several, like multiple dust storms that get going because there's that area of thunderstorms that develop a little bit closer to the equator. So just north of that, where it picks up that dust.
It's interesting, and then you have the confluence of all of these factors. And
There's a lot to consider.
As a layperson, you wonder, how do you determine, which one is going to have greater influence than the other at a point in time on a certain day that may be critical to the formation of that hurricane or that storm?
Right. And that's, unfortunately, more than a week out, we don't have very much. Now, within a week out, we have computer forecast models that can really hone in on certain key entities, at least in the short term. And, that's even if we're about a week out in the forecast and we're seeing a generation of a storm, near the Cabo Verde Islands, way out there, almost like really, really close to Africa. We see a storm develop. Okay, well, that's a week from now. If it does develop and it does make an impact on the U.S., it wouldn't be for about 10 days later. So think about that. We are able to see about a week out, but again, even then, we're not sure what the pattern is going to be like in 10 days. Is it going to make it all the way across the Caribbean? Is it going to make it into the Gulf? Is it going to affect the Gulf? Is it going to affect the East Coast? Even in 10 days, we wouldn't know.
So when we talk about the data that's generated and we're looking at the noodle maps, right? Why is there such a broad differential sometimes? And what is it that they're evaluating? I mean, do some models put more emphasis on one data point as others, as opposed to others?
Well, you got to understand, different models have different physics and also different resolution. Resolution is key. Most of the forecast guidance is actually considered global guidance. In other words, it's forecasting and over the entire globe. So when you're doing that, you have to limit the resolution just a little bit. Otherwise, it would take days for one model run to be calculated. So those differences in resolution kind of have an impact on exactly, like you said, the spaghetti plots can have an impact on one particular track. And also it depends on, what we're using now is the same, like one model set. We're able to see different members of that model called ensembles. So we're able to see that one run with 30 different variations from a starting point. So that takes in any type of uncertainty from the beginning, from the start of the run. So we use all that data. And if there's a general consensus, we kind of are more confident in terms of track of the storm. Now, sometimes you'll see that where, especially early on in the storm's life, where the spaghetti models, especially toward the end of the run, like 5, 6, 7 days out, where there's so many variations. Generally, again, that's early on. The storm has not been sampled by our friends at the Hurricane Hunters, by satellites, by surface observations, upper air observations. We're at that point collecting as much data as we can going into those forecast model runs in order to get an idea, a better consensus of where the storm will go. I hope that answers your question. This is a lot of science.
No,
there.
Absolutely. I guess, though, it begs the question of why do we show so many? I mean, if resolution is key, I think that's the word you use, if that's key, and we know that a number of these represent much less resolution, we're not really comparing apples to apples. And I think I think the interpretation by the public is that we are. And that's why I asked, are we just placing more importance on a data point than otherwise? But it's even more granular than that. So I question, then what is the value of showing all of these?
Well, I mean, that's you know, something that, you know, I guess you could ask, you know, media, you know, our
the local meteorologist,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Because here's the thing, here's a problem with spaghetti plots. And, you know, we have multiple discussions about this every year. Folks are going to see what they want to see out of those. Right. If you have like five tracks going to Houston and one track going to New Orleans, all of a sudden it's coming to New Orleans, even though that's a far eastern outlier. People see what they want to see. You know, there's also the flip side of that where it's like, OK, well, you know, there's one track going to New Orleans, four tracks or five tracks going to Houston. I'm in the clear. Well, not necessarily. Things can shift, especially early on in the life of a hurricane.
What if it's the most reliable spaghetti model that's been proven itself over and over again out there, right?
Well, show me a spaghetti model, just one track that has. You're not going to find it. We need all of them. We need that consensus amongst the models have a better idea.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Rob. Is there one in your estimation that's the most reliable?
They're all reliable in certain situations. It depends on the situation. I mean, I know that that's vague and not as clear as mud, but I'm just saying that I'm looking not at one model, but a consensus of models in order to have my certainty in forecasting. Yeah.
Well, when you do so, and you're involved in your assessment, do you tend to cluster the models that have near the same resolution?
It depends. In a lot of ways, yes. But at the end of the day, for me, I'm looking at two things. I'm looking at in terms of what the model is producing in terms of track and intensity. Track, I'm more confident in. Intensity, not so much. Models struggle with intensity, again, because of, like I said, differing resolutions, differing, you know, atmospheric, you know, parameters, that sort of thing go into, you know, just how strong systems are going to be. Unfortunately, you know, we haven't gotten as good at forecasting for intensity as we have the track. So that's, you know, we always tell, at least here at the Weather Service, tell folks, you know, if you're under the gun, you are expected to go two categories higher than what's forecast just to be safe. It's always a good rule to have here, as if they are, if we are forecasting a category two, it doesn't hurt to prepare for a category four just in case.
So as it relates to forecasting, what do you see in the future? Is there a role for AI? Do y'all see where that's a potential tool that helps?
Well, it's unique that you mentioned AI because models of themselves is AI.
Yes.
In general,
I thought it would be.
And we've been using those for a long time, even before AI was a buzzword. We've been using those. So yeah, I mean, it's already here.
Yeah.
And in terms of where it goes in the future, I'm sure that there's going to be advancements. I'm not an AI specialist, but I do know that it's essentially what we've been doing for so many years, all along. It's just now we have a fancy little buzzword to put on it.
Yeah. Well, I was just kind of curious if there's water cooler chatter about, you know, where the future holds for you guys as forecasters, you know, and whether or not the advancement of and the maturation of AI, I
right.
guess, more than anything else, offers
right.
new possibilities for you.
I mean, absolutely. But there's one thing that, you know, in terms of weather, we take a lot of heat being meteorologists. We got thick skin. We're used to it because we're always wrong. Right. But here's the thing. Weather's always going to be
that.
An imperfect science. No. But I'm pretty sure some of your viewers do.
But I have.
but here's the thing. It's going to always be an imperfect science. We're essentially, our job
right.
is to place a value on infinity. Because until we are able to sample every molecule of air from not just at the ground level here, but from the ground to the top of the tropopause all around the globe, we're not going to be perfect. We're not going to have
right.
a 100% accurate forecast, which is honestly, it's quite fun because it's a challenge. And that's the challenge. And this is one of the challenges that really, really livened me up getting into this field. It's always a challenge. Yeah, you got to have thick skin, you have tough skin, but you know, it's that challenge that I'm going for.
Well, every minute of every day during the pendency of a storm is a very dynamic situation. Rare is it static for long, right? It's constantly
right.
conditions are constantly changing, and it's
yes,
it's the
exactly.
ability and the process of how quickly you can you can deal with that all that information is probably right. One of the bigger challenges, I would imagine.
It is. It is. And like I said, it's just, you know, trying to place a value on Infinity Year. It's really, really difficult, but it's fun to try. Definitely
well,
fun
Buzz
to try.
Lightyear was able to do it, wasn't he?
Infinity and beyond, so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Rob, thank you so much for joining us. I enjoyed that conversation. I learned some things here today, and, you know, because people's expectations of this are one thing and what reality is something else. And it's nice to have a candid conversation about both. Rob Fry, lead forecaster, sure. National Weather Service. Have a great week. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Take care.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Equinor Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can choose the TV you want with DirecTV.
So now they can pick out their favorite entertainment when they sign up and save money?
You mean if you like sports,
you can get a sports pack.
What about entertainment?
Entertainment pack.
It's like finding an old pizza with your favorite toppings.
Which for me would be pineapple and toenails. Pineapple?
Pay for the TV you want, not the TV you don't. Genre pack starting at $34.99 a month. Visit DirecTV.com for more information. New residential customers only. Local channels vary by market. Services renew monthly unless you cancel online. Credit card required. Restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Tricia Wallace, president of the Lincoln Beach Community Advisory Committee and co-founder of New Orleans for Lincoln Beach. And we love to check in with her periodically to see what is the latest and the status of the Lincoln Beach product. Tricia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. How are you today?
Doing well, Tricia. So I know that you guys have a meeting this evening at 6 p.m. at 9820 Lake Forest Boulevard, Suite 105, which is the advisory committee meeting for the Lincoln Beach community. What will they hear this evening?
Okay, well, first of all, this is rescheduled from our first quarter meeting. So a lot, the weather stopped us from having that one. So what's going on right now is we just come from a couple weeks of visiting with city council, and we had a meeting with the mayor as well. And we're just asking that the promises that were made to us early on in 2020, 2021, is that they open the beach in 2025, a simple beach, and then continue. I mean, we're not asking that the master plan process stop. What we're asking is that they open the beach as a park, and while we're figuring out what, you know, what other great things could be there, you have it open, because we do not have the funding to open the beach in the way that it has been presented to us, concepts that we have seen.
And what was the council and what was the mayor's response?
Well, the council put an ordinance to have transparency on the project, and that just happened recently, as of this week. Last week, we that's how the meeting ended, with them putting in passing an ordinance to give us transparency on this project.
When we say transparency, what do they intend to do to accomplish same? Do you know?
So currently, that's what's going on. We're discussing how to move forward, because when all these conversations started, this was before Mardi Gras. We hadn't heard anything. We hadn't had an update since December. And then it was like, we're going to have this one final thing and we're celebrating the master plan. And I said, well, I think what we should do, that's great, but we also should understand when the beach is going to open. Because I don't think celebrating, you know, a master plan without knowing that is productive. And I don't think it will sit well with the rest of us, you know. So that's kind of where we are. We just want an update, a real update on what's going on and when can the beach open. And so that's what we're continuing to discuss. The community has expressed that they want a commission. So we're talking about how to create a commission. There was word, you know, conservancy was thrown in there. So it's just basically trying to figure out how the beach will be operated and governed once it is open. I think that's the basic gist of the conversation. How we get there is kind of a little murky, but they did bring in Maroon to help to get this moving along.
And is that a facilitator or a development
consultant?
They're
a strategic planning company, but yeah, they did bring them in to help plan out how the community will be fairly engaged in going forward.
So the council responds by passing a transparency ordinance. What was the response from Mayor Cantrell's administration to having some part of the beach open for this summer?
Their response was, now this, we spoke with them before this happened, and they were speaking about a groundbreaking in October. So opening the beach before this summer is not even a part of the conversation. They're talking about a groundbreaking in October. And so that's what led to the questions of, okay, if we're breaking ground in October, when will the beach actually be open? So there are different dates being thrown out at us. 2027 is one, which, you know, part of what my goal is to get them to just direct people towards the meetings, direct them to the website, have accurate information on the website so that you don't keep just answering things, saying anything as it's being planned, because things do change. And numbers, see, what we also need to recognize is that, okay, once COVID came into play, the numbers jumped up as far as construction. Now we have tariffs. We haven't even discussed, you know, and how construction numbers will jump because of that. And our goal is to get them to spend more money on construction and less money on consultation, because all the plans seem to be for planning and consultants, and we're wondering how much of this is going to construction. So, you know, we're not asking to do anyone's job or you know, let the professionals be professional and do what they do. But also, if we see something that's not making sense, then we need to understand why that's going to happen and why that's fair, equitable, and legal.
Right. Tricia, last time you and I talked, correct me if I'm wrong, you were very excited and thought that y'all had momentum and things were moving in a nice, positive way. How would you characterize the way you feel today about it?
Today I feel hopeful that we can, I feel hopeful that this can happen. But I am not excited as I was, because at that time I felt like I had clarity and things were making sense. And now I find out that the whole time we've been meeting with Sasaki, and really Digital Engineering is the company that's contracted to do the Quick Open. So they were contracted to do the utilities, clean up the beach, the parking lot, you know, those type of things. Mm-hmm. And the things that
happen. Yeah, remember, that's what you were all excited about. I mean, like,
exactly.
Something was going to actually happen.
Well,
because
there was
talk that you would be able to be on the beach for this summer, if my memory serves me correctly.
Exactly. And so now, you know, it's like no conversation, and now that's not happening, and you want us to celebrate in May a completion of a master plan that does not reflect what the community wants entirely. And then, no, you know, the beach is not even going to open this year. I think, no, it's not exciting at all.
No, I mean, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I could kind of sense it in your voice, and I feel bad. I mean, you know, because it seems as though the thing was going in a very positive direction, and there was going to be an interim solution, and then a more permanent development plan put into place. And you know, obviously, there were significant discussions about the funding and financing of same. I guess, you know, not.
When you're a part of the conversation, when you have to fight to be a part of the conversation, and now you're a part of the conversation, and then it becomes a daily thing. Like, it would be different, I think, if I wasn't in conversations every day. People call me on the weekends. I get calls and emails 4 o'clock in the morning, and then to then turn around months later and completely feel like I really don't know what's going on or what's going to happen. The shift concerns me, and it also, but I feel like we're engaged enough to be on top of it and see when things change. And also, sometimes it's not fun or pretty. It's just the part that you have to go through, and, you know, people are mad at you, people, but it's okay, because I feel like as long as we're moving forward, you know, it'll be okay. There's a lot of, there's been a lot of confusion, and I just think really it's because no one really knew how to open a beach, and so everybody's just trying to use their expertise in the best way. Now, sometimes there's a disconnect, and things don't push through the way that they should, and that's why we're here, to help push it through. And that's really all I can say. I'm still fighting to get it open this year. That's what I'm going to say until probably December 2025, I'll be on. There is a way that it can happen, because the way that the community wants it is simply how we were using it. It's not, we're not asking for Disney World, you know, on.
Right.
On these 17 acres, 15, really.
I thought in our last conversation, you were very realistic about, you know, your expectations of what you wanted to see happen. The interim solution seemed like something that was achievable while this overall master plan was being, you know, flushed out and developed and so forth. And it just, it sounds like to me, you correct me if I'm wrong, the interim solution off the table is what it sounds like to me.
That, and that is exactly what it sounds like. They were calling it phase zero, and I don't, now it, I mean, that's what the new name was, but I don't know. Now it seems to be off the table, as well as some other design elements. And I just think that it's important that people know what's going on.
Is there anybody
from
Is there anyone from the city that will be at tonight's meeting?
I'm not sure who's. It's been kind of strange and, you know, tense lately. So I'm not sure who's showing up. But I just know that, you
Whose
know, we
council
have to,
district is this in?
Oliver Thomas. Okay. Now, Oliver Thomas right. does have Wesley Bishop on, who's in his office. He's on the LBCAC, and he has another representative, Shawan Bernard, Shawan will most likely be there. If not, she's been tapping in, you know, checking in and very helpful. So I'm sure she'll, you know. But, yeah, I don't know who's coming, but we have to discuss this.
Yeah. Well, best of luck this evening at 9820 Lake Forest Boulevard, Suite 105 is the Lincoln Beach Community Advisory Committee meeting. And, Tricia, thanks so much for joining us and giving us an update. Tricia Wallace, president of the Lincoln Beach Community Advisory Committee and co-founder of New Orleans for Lincoln Beach. Thank you, ma'am, and have a great week. We will be right back, folks.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Breaking news, folks. President Donald Trump announced a 90-day pause of the higher tariffs as well as the reciprocal tariffs against about 60 or so trading partners that went into effect earlier today. With the exception of China, an abrupt change in what he was doing, China tariff will still increase to 125%. He says due to Beijing's continued retaliation, the market has, and the global baseline tariff increase of 10% stays in place for all of those countries. So the 10% tariff stays in place. The market response has been very positive. The Dow's up over 1,900 points of about 20 minutes ago. Not sure exactly where it is, but it's obviously very dynamic and responding favorably to this. Big change. Be interesting to see how folks assess and evaluate this move at this time, because they seem to be resolute in their position just yesterday, but things are changing fast. When we come back after the break, we will visit with Ian Hoke, who's in for Scoot. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. Ian Hoke's in for Scoot. What do we have coming up, Ian?
Good afternoon, Newell. We're going to talk about this splashy new study that says we should be banning cars from Bourbon Street, turn it into a permanent pedestrian mall. We'll ask, what else should we be banning from Bourbon Street? We will talk about the Ponchatoula Strawberry Festival and the Claiborne Avenue Expressway. New study out on that as well. Should be a good one.
Ian's up next. Stay tuned, folks. Got a great lineup. See you again in the morning.